From WKAR at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports with Al Martin.
Johnny Peralta lines one to right field for a base hit.
Miguel Cabrera, game-winning walk-off home run.
The champagne is flowing in the Tigers clubhouse.
I would have never, ever thought that I would have been in the Michigan Hall of Fame as a kid when I first picked up a basketball on 512 Gray Street in Flint, Michigan.
Thomas drives from the left side, goes up and banks it in. Jasmine Thomas.
Just the joy you get from watching it, like a JV wrestler. Getting his first match ever. That makes it worthwhile as a coach.
It's a fake. Bates is going to throw. Touchdown! Michigan State wins it in overtime!
Good afternoon, ladies and gents. It's that time of the day once again on this June 12th. 2013. It's hump day, and I hope you all are making it a productive one. Current Sports is bringing you another great show with tons of things to talk about and discuss, including the Detroit Tigers pitcher Max Scherzer, who did something last night that hasn't been done since the 30s. A certain Wolverine keeps improving his draft stock, and the San Antonio Spurs make the Miami Heat look just non-existent in Game 3. I mean, it was a good old-fashioned butt-kicking. All right, as you see, much to talk about, including the conclusion of our special of referees and their impact on sports. Keep it locked right here. Current Sports starts right now. Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Again, before we kick off the show, thanks to all of you out there who have been tuning into your radios, listening day in and day out to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Be a part of the hands-on discussion each and every day. Follow me on Twitter at Al Martin WKAR. Like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports, or even email me a question at almartin@wkar.org. Hit us up, ladies and gents. We want to hear what's on your mind. So let's get right into things. You all know that throughout this entire week so far, we have tackled a topic that normally doesn't get much publicity, if any for that matter. That topic being the impact that referees in sports and the abuse they take out on the field. Now, on Monday, we invited Dan Jimenez to our studio. Dan has refereed baseball and basketball for over 40 years in the area, and he gave us insight on how sports should be called and the integrity that an official must maintain at all times. Now, yesterday, we talked with Carlos Foligno, the state referee administrator, and is also a member of the USSF Referee Committee. He has refereed soccer for many years. Carlos gave us great detail into the abuse that refs take and how they are trained to deal with those hostile environments at times. Now, he gave us an account of how he was once even attacked while officiating a game. He was actually punched in the face during an event. Wow. So, well, today, we welcome Mark Yule, the assistant director for the Michigan High School Athletic Association. He began his work there back in January of 2004. He has an extensive officiating career prior to his hiring as assistant director for the MHSAA. He had been registered in at least three sports since 1992, worked the baseball finals back in 1999, also served as a collegiate baseball umpire at all levels since 1996, has experience at the minor league level, and also a Big Ten baseball umpire for about 15 years. Mark, you've done it all, man. Welcome to Current Sports.
Good to be with you, Al. Thanks.
Thank you, man. So how did you personally get started in the world of refereeing?
Well, I actually grew up in an officiating household. My dad has been a high school referee for 45 years. It was a case of he ran the local Little League where we grew up. And as he was running the Little League and I was playing at the 12-year-old level, I would go back and umpire the 10-year-olds and kept moving right on up. My younger brother was in professional baseball for 11 years as an umpire, got all the way up to the AAA level. So with us, it was just kind of in our blood and grew up with it. And officiating has been a really big part of my life.
So you kind of been destined for this already, then.
If you want to use the word destined, I guess. But, yeah, officiating is really it's the one and only hobby that I have and absolutely love it.
So, Mark, for you, yesterday, like I said just a minute ago, we talked with Carlos Foligno, who you know. He stated that when he really went in depth into the abuse that referees endure sometimes when they're out in the field of play. Now, I don't know if you heard about this story, the ref out in Utah who was actually, he drew a yellow card, 17-year-old punches him in the face, he goes into a coma and passes away. And Carlos kind of had some an experience kind of similar to that. Thank God it wasn't fatal, but he was even punched in the face. I mean, this is really getting out of hand over the years. Have you ever been involved in a hostile physical situation while officiating?
Really haven't. You know, my recent experience is umpiring baseball at the Division I level. So you go to a Big Ten school or some of the NCAA tournament things, we have security with us at all times. So it's never been an issue at the collegiate level. And that's the same for, you know, Big Ten basketball or football and really across the board. Now, with my day job with the MHSAA, even at the school sports level, really security is good. We have athletic directors, we have site supervisors, game managers, and to be honest, in the world of school sports, there is accountability for coaches and players. It's a case if a coach gets out of line and gets ejected, or the same thing with a player, there's really a structure in place where they can deal with that bad behavior, to where if a coach gets ejected multiple times during the year, they're out of our MHSAA tournament at the end of the season. Same way if a player or coach would ever physically contact an official, and then that leads to an ejection, then they are ineligible to play in our tournament. So in the school setting, we really have a framework that's built to really model good sportsmanship. Now, where you hear the horror stories
right,
are the non-school programs, where there is no athletic director, there is no principal, there is no governing body, so to speak, when things go sideways and get out of hand, to where, you know, I have young kids right now, and some of the worst things that I see from a sportsmanship aspect are going to my kids' youth hockey games or a youth football rocket game on a Saturday, mm-hmm. where, again, coaches, players, and even their parents and spectators, there's really no accountability. So we often talk in the office, is there a way that we could reach out and work with some of these youth programs to really give them some guidance? Because from a high school perspective, all these youth sport parents and coaches that maybe teeter on the brink of being out of control will eventually become our high school parents, and right, we want to get them off on the right foot in terms of what is going to be accepted and what isn't, which will only make the job easier for our member school ADs once those folks keep moving up the ladder.
Now, you talk about that accountability. What are some things that you're seeing that's kind of alerting you guys to this and saying, whoa, we got to change this?
Yeah, we've really tried to be ahead of the curve with some of our penalties, where with coaches or players, ejections, every ejection gets turned into our office. And the coach that gets ejected twice during a season, they're out of our tournament. So if the varsity football coach gets ejected two times during the regular season, he can't coach during the MHSAA playoffs if their team should qualify.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with players. A third ejection on the part of a player, they're also ineligible for our tournament. And then any physical contact, same thing, out of our tournament. I can tell you that has greatly improved the sportsmanship climate, as well as the fact that if you get ejected from a middle school or high school game, you're out for the rest of that day, plus your team's next day. So automatically we have a suspension mechanism built in. And again, you don't want to talk about suspensions being something positive, but I can tell you that our ejection and suspension rule serves as the best deterrent that we have, because at the end of the day, what do kids want to do? They want to play.
They want to play.
And right, when they get out of line and get ejected, they know that if they cross that line, that it's going to mean they're going to be sitting, and that's really the best carrot that we have out there.
Ladies and gents, we're talking with Mark Yule, the assistant director over at the MHSAA here in Michigan, and also a Big Ten baseball umpire for 15 years and counting. Mark, how are officials trained to deal with hostile environments?
You know, the toughest thing is you have to have thick skin. And there are some people to where that's a real easy skill to pick up, to where with other folks that get involved in officiating, there's that natural reaction to try and respond or react to everything that's
right,
said.
Right.
The biggest thing that we teach is you have to tell the difference between something that's just said in anger or frustration versus something that's personal. For example, working a baseball game, if somebody says, "Oh, Mark, that's a terrible call." Well, we can agree to disagree on that, and we can even have a little conversation back and forth, but it
right,
was that call was terrible. Well, if it turns into, "Mark, you're terrible," or "Mark, you're an awful umpire."
That's personal.
That's now personal, and that's something that we're going to deal with. If it's a sport where we can throw the flag or give a technical foul or give a yellow card, that needs to happen. If it's a sport where That just means an automatic ejection that needs to happen. So it's the judging that line of what's personal and what's not. Certainly at our high school level, any kind of profanity should be an automatic penalty. That's something that we're just not going to tolerate in the school sports setting.
Right.
So it's really figuring out what is going to be acceptable, because in sports you're going to have to agree to disagree at times. But it's really building that foundation to where things that pass into the personal area, we have to penalize it. Because if you're refereeing one day and you allow a coach to get all after you on a personal level, and then I have to come in and officiate that team's next game, and now I do deal with it and penalize it, well, then it makes the job of all officials much harder. So if we can try and give that consistent message that here are things that are okay, here are things that aren't, I think it'll just make everybody's job so much easier.
So, Mark, you've been an official. I mean, you're still an official, for goodness sake. I mean, I'm sure you've dealt with rowdy coaches over the years. Give me an example of how you dealt with a coach.
You know, the biggest thing is coaches just want to be heard. You have to, and I know it's hard for us sometimes as officials, but to put yourself in the shoes of coaches. At the high school level right now, Al, coaching, in my opinion, has never been more challenging. You're dealing with very high, in some cases, unrealistic expectation of parents.
Right.
To where they think that that coach, it's the responsibility to get my kid to the next level, whatever that is. It's to get my kid that college scholarship. It's to get my kid noticed in media attention so they can maybe play on the best AAU team. Fill in the blank. There has never been more pressure on coaches today, especially given the fact that if a parent or the kid doesn't like their coach, they can now go to social media, to where now it becomes in chat rooms, and it becomes in Twitter, and it becomes with Facebook posts. So I think our officials have to understand that the job of coaching at the high school level has never been more difficult. And certainly with more pressure on coaches, you'll see more emotional reactions during games. So what you need to do first is listen. You know, a coach is upset with something that I've called, the first thing I try and do is say nothing, and I just listen. Because a lot of times that coach, in kind of their little opening statement, so to speak, or their opening yell, may give me something where I can redirect the conversation to where it may be just them, oh, Mark, my gosh, there is no way my guy was out. How could you make that call?
Yeah.
It's like, well, hey, I don't want to argue with you, coach, but you know what? I can tell you what I saw, and I can just give you that explanation. So if you want to have a conversation about the play, we can go ahead and do it. But frankly, if you're just going to yell and vent, I'm just going to stand here and listen, and you're going to need to go back and coach your team, and I need to stand here and keep umpiring. So I'm going to put the choice to you. A lot of times, if you can then give the coach kind of that choice of, okay, well, all right, what did you see? And we can then discuss the play in a civil manner. It's never going to change anything, but hopefully I can get him to go back and move on to his next thing that he's worried about, and the game can continue. So that really is the strategy and some of the techniques we try and arm our officials with as we train them to head out there.
So when it boils down to it, when you're dealing with a coach or a player, anything for that matter, either one of those, it all depends on their attitude and how they approach the situation involved with the referees, that interaction.
There are many times where an explanation is warranted and deserved. And typically it's not really from players, because it's really not their place in many cases, unless they're a team captain, say in hockey or in basketball or in football, where they actually have a role to interact with the officials. 95% of our exchanges are with coaches, and we try and encourage our officials, when explanations are warranted, explain to the coach what you saw. Explain to the coach why you called. Let's try and get out of the argument business, and let's try and get more into the conversation business. And if you can keep it at a conversational level, things typically don't escalate, and you can keep them in the game, and hopefully we can keep the contest moving with no issues.
We're talking with Mark Ewell here on Current Sports Today. He is the assistant director over at the Michigan High School Athletic Association. He's been refereeing for countless years. He's actually a Big Ten baseball umpire for 15 years and counting. So, Mark, how do you feel as though referees are protected enough when you talk about this whole abuse conversation?
It's in many states, state legislatures have actually passed laws that deal specifically with abuse toward game officials.
Okay.
In some states, they feel that that's a necessary measure to almost make sports officials a protected class, so to speak, to where, again, that fear of punishment may actually make officials safer. You take the total number of games that are played out there in all sports, the number of incidents that you hear about where there is a confrontation or physical contact. And a lot of times it's not coaches or participants. In many cases, it's the officials are leaving the venue, and it's often a spectator, many times a parent, who they can't control their own emotional state of being. And that's where some of the issues really come from. But you look at it in the total gross numbers. I mean, that happens very few and far between. But it's a case of, you know, those that run and administer these leagues have to spell out the expectations that everybody has to be working from before those seasons begin. Because I've found even the non-school programs, the leagues that are well-run and spell out that, hey, we are not going to tolerate you attacking or verbally or physically officials. We're just not going to put up with that around here, and those leagues tend to go pretty well. The ones that don't spell out expectations ahead of times, that's where the problems come about.
Now, Mark, you've played baseball over at Calvin College in Grand Rapids. Even an assistant football coach over at Thorn Apple Kellogg Schools in Middleville, when it came to your interaction with refs, I'm sure it got heated at times. As that's just the nature of sports. But did you become sympathetic at all toward refs after becoming one and seeing what they go through?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, having officiated even, you know, during my teenage years working Little League Baseball gave me a far different perspective than maybe what most high school athletes or even college athletes had, to where you realize that officials are important. You realize that without officials, we can't play these games. And the biggest thing, and everybody says, we need more officials and we need better officials. Well, the way to get more officials and better officials is to try and create an environment where these folks have a good time.
Right.
They can learn and improve without every single call being treated like it's the seventh game of the World Series or right now the seventh game of the NBA Finals. I think you have to realize that in any game, any football game, a basketball game, a soccer match, the game is not going to be played perfectly by the players. The game is not going to be coached perfectly by the coaches. And so for us to have this expectation of imperfect coaches, imperfect players, but yet somehow the officials have to be perfect from their very first day on the job and then only improve on that, I think is unrealistic. So it's the folks that can step back and realize that sports are an imperfect activity by imperfect people, and it's all just part of the game. And the other thing, Al, you know, with instant replay that we keep hearing is, oh, we need to expand instant replay. Well, at the high school and middle school level, we're really opposed to instant replay because part of learning and part of the experiences of playing on a school sports team is you realize that life isn't perfect. And a lot of times you can learn things when you lose and you can also learn things when you win. And you realize that sometimes life isn't fair and there's valuable lessons in being able to pick up the pieces and be able to move on to the next thing. Well, what instant replay does, it really puts the pause button on everything and says, that's okay. And here in life, everything is going to be perfect because as long as we have video, we can fix it.
Right.
So it's not even so much of a playing rule or a technology piece. The reason that we don't want replay at the high school level is I think it sets up our kids for failure that life isn't going to be perfect, that every call is not going to be perfect. And a very important life skill is realizing that, hey, when you get a bad call, how are you going to deal with it? How are you going to respond? How are you going to move on? And that's life. And that, I think, is one of the most valuable lessons that hopefully our young people have on a middle school or a high school team.
Mark, that is a very, very good point when you talk about – just speaking from the high school perspective, I mean – because, I mean, that's a great teacher of life, and I believe sports is one of the biggest reasons why I got into sports, because it's such a big lesson of life when you look at the values and the things you learn throughout playing sports, you know?
Because instant replay makes sense at the pro level.
Yeah,
millions of dollars are riding on things to where a missed call, home run or not, or in football, you know, down or fumble, or even in basketball now they can go to replay without a bounce calls.
Right.
The money that's at stake there, that's understandable.
So you agree replay should be in baseball. That's our discussion today, too. Later on, we're going to be debating this. So do you agree that replay should be in baseball?
I think replay should be expanded. And the reason why is if you would ask the 68 full-time Major League umpires, they want to be able to walk out of the ballpark every single night knowing that they're not going to be the story. You take the Jim Joyce play in Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
He became a national... first of all, a national villain, and then became almost a national folk hero the following day. You take that same scenario and put that in an NFL game. That call would have been made. They would have stopped the game. A minute later, somebody would have announced in some way or fashion that the call has been overturned and reversed. They would have gone on and celebrated that perfect game, and no one would have even remembered who the official
and
was
ref.
Involved.
Right.
And I think you ask the big league umpires, they don't want to become the story. And if it means that they can use technology and it's done quickly and it's a way that they can get the play right, and they then – that just takes off an awful lot of pressure that guys right now in the baseball world feel.
Definitely. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Mark Ewell, the assistant director over at the Michigan High School Athletic Association. He's been a long-time official, actually a Big Ten baseball umpire for 15 years and counting. So, Mark, for those who are not familiar with the MHSAA, what is your position entail, the assistant director of MHSAA? What do you handle?
The biggest piece of my day is coordinating and working with our 12,000 registered officials. That's our referees, our umpires, our judges in some sports. If someone is interested, for example, in getting into officiating, come to our website, mhsaa.com. The first step is you then become registered with the MHSAA. You sign up, you tell us what sports you'd like to become an official. We then get you rule books, training manuals. An official that's registered with us, actually, Al, has insurance coverage.
Okay.
If you're refereeing for us under the MHSAA Association, if you get sued during a game that you're working, maybe an athlete becomes injured, and
right.
the parents feel that the referees allowed the game to get out of control, we actually have coverage, liability coverage, for that official while working. Same way, if an official gets injured seriously during one of our contests, we have some medical coverage for that. So a lot of benefits in becoming an MHSAA registered official. And then once we get you registered, we then get you connected with a local group for local training, opens the doors up to game assignments, and then hopefully we can get you involved for a long and prosperous officiating career. And to you ask, by and large, our 12,000 officials, and they tell you that officiating is a big part of their life. Even though that
right.
their playing days are far in the rearview mirror of life, it still gives them that game each week to look forward to. It allows them to continue to work with young people. It allows them to maybe fulfill part of that competitiveness that we all still have. And officiating is really a neat way to do it. Plus, you're going out to pursue your hobby. Tell me, what other hobbies can you go out, participate in, and actually then come home with more money than what you started with? That's why my wife
That's
has
right.
been so supportive of my one and only hobby is baseball. If my hobby was golf or hunting, I would be gone on weekends spending money.
Right.
When I come home Sunday night after a Big Ten series, I actually come home with money. So it's a really neat way to chase your passions and yet also make a little money as well.
Definitely. Mark Ewell, the assistant director over at the MHSAA and also a Big Ten baseball umpire for 15 years. He's done countless games. So, Mark, I got to ask you also, man, before we wrap things up, what improvements, when you first got this job with the MHSAA, what did you want to do? What were your goals, and what improvements can the MHSAA make to become better?
I think the biggest thing is we need to be the biggest supporters of officials anywhere in our state. When things go sideways during a game, the two teams typically are going to first have the backs of their coaches and their players. Same way with spectators. And a lot of times, the one person that could get hanging out there a little bit out to dry are the officials. So the thing that we have tried to do is we have been supportive of our officials. Our officials know when they work, yes, they're not going to be perfect, but at the end of the day, we are going to support them as long as they're following the rules, using common sense, and doing the right thing. So
right.
that's been the biggest thing, because if we're going to attract more people into officiating, they have to know that they're going to be supported by the MHSAA. The other piece that we've tried to do is really use technology, to where a lot of our training, we're trying to use more and more video whenever we can, because the best teacher, obviously, is using real live game footage, and we've been able to incorporate that in a lot of our training across the board, whether it be a soccer referee, a basketball official, a football back judge, or a wrestling referee.
So will we see that at the high school level?
Yeah, we take game footage and then we put that together in a package to where if I'm a football referee, we're able to show them 20 clips on holding. Here are examples
okay.
of
Got
fouls
it.
That are fouls, and then here are some examples of we need to pass on that. And that's not holding in this case. So we're really trying to make it by topic to where an official really can get brought up to speed quite quickly
right.
with some of the video that we're putting together and using that as a good teaching tool.
But we won't see instant replay at the high school. That's not what it's moving towards right now.
It is not. No,
gotcha.
It's used only in basketball and ice hockey. Those are the two sports. And in basketball at the Breslin only, it's only our semis and finals where we can use that for just a last-second shot
right.
or a foot on the two-point line, yes or no. And then in ice hockey, we'd use that at our final simply if a puck has crossed the line or not. But gotcha. Right now, the playing rules, those are the only two places they allow replay at the high school level, and we hope it goes no further than that.
Right, legend. We're talking with Mark Ewell, the assistant director at the MHSAA. Mark, you were also, a lot of people don't know this, you were also an athletic director at Thornapple Kellogg. Now, to see that position, just looking at the Lansing School District, to see that position now shifted to the assistant principals of the Lansing School District, what are your initial thoughts, and describe how big of a job being an AD is?
In my 20 years now in this business, approximately, you know, as a high school teacher, a high school AD, and now moving to the MHSAA, over that 20 years ago, every school had their own dedicated athletic director. In many cases, that person would be the high school AD and then maybe the middle school AD, but they were a dedicated athletic director. That's all they did, making sure kids were eligible. And because with the AD, that's one of the few jobs in a school where you're really on duty until and sometimes 9, 10 o'clock at night, whenever those nights where you have home events.
Right.
Well, as the Michigan economy really fell on hard times, late 90s, early 2000, in where school funds were really shrunk by a great deal, what schools did to combat that was a way to save money is, well, now we'll take our athletic director and also add on the old Cordell Stewart, some slashes to where you're not only the AD, but you're now the AD and the assistant principal. You're the athletic director, assistant principal, transportation director, keep filling in those blanks.
Right.
And it just now spreads the ADs thinner and thinner. So we circle back and look at the Lansing situation. The Lansing School District's in an awfully tough spot because from a financial standpoint, on one hand, they're trying to make the best decisions possible so that they can have a balanced budget and so that they believe that the Lansing School District taxpayers are getting the most value for their money.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly looking at ways to be as efficient as possible. But yet on the other side of that coin, not having a full-time athletic director, you know, having athletic coordinators or even taking one person that's coordinating athletics and sharing them between buildings, you're just not able to meet the needs of the coaches, the student athletes, and the parents. In terms of all those details, having game schedules set, making sure that all kids are eligible, and making sure that there's a site supervisor at every home game.
Right.
And it's too big of a job, right? It's too big of a
job. So you don't think that being an assistant principal, which that's a huge job in itself, and AD, which is a huge job, I mean, one of those is going to get shortchanged, right?
Without question, because as the assistant principal, you've got to be in the building 7 a.m. each day, and you are on duty every minute when kids are in the building during that school day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then the school day ends, and 5 minutes later, now all of your athletic teams are really in full throttle, and you have to be available for all of those kids from that 2:30 p.m. and in some cases till 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night if you've got home games. So to try and find that person that's willing to work the 7 a.m. to the 10 p.m.,
right.
It's an awfully tough job, and what we found is that in districts that have gone that route, somebody can do that for a year or two or maybe three, and then they simply burn out because you can't burn that candle at both ends.
Boy, well, I really hope that changes in the future for the Lansing School District, Mark, I tell you. Well, there you have it. Mark Ewell, he has been registered in at least three sports since 92, worked with the baseball finals in 1999, served as a collegiate baseball umpire at all levels since 1996, also a Big Ten baseball umpire as we speak, going on 15 years and counting. He's done so much experience at the minor league level. Mark, now the assistant director for the Michigan High School Athletic Association. Mark, thanks so much for being on Current Sports, man.
Al, great to be with you, and congratulations on your new job over here at WKAR. Look forward to listening to you here for a long time.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Really appreciate that, man. All right, well, when we return to Current Sports, we will dive into our Current Sports section of the show. We want to let you know that we'll be taking your calls at 1:40. Don't hesitate to pick up that phone and dial 517-355-9527 again. 517-355-9527. Let us hear your thoughts on the discussion we just had with Mark. We want to talk about anything that's on your mind as well. Stay tuned. More Current Sports is coming right up.
We'll be right back. Lawmakers take up immigration on the Hill. Senate candidates are set in New Jersey. Virginia voters head to the polls. And Congress takes sides in the Edward Snowden leak case. I'm Lynn Neary. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us. Plus, our political speechwriting duo Paul Glastris and Peter Robinson are back. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up at 2 p.m.
Every weekday afternoon at 4, All Things Considered keeps you up to date on current events nationally and around the world. I inform you on what's happening at the state and local levels. Hi, I'm Brad Walker, your host for All Things Considered. Join me as we stay on top of the things that matter to you on All Things Considered, weekdays from 4 until 6 on AM 870 WKAR.
Good people, welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. It's now time for Current Sports, giving you all the sporting news concerning the good people of Mid-Michigan. I want to remind you that we'll be taking your calls at 140 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Want to hear what's on your mind? Let's dive right into the topics. The Detroit Tigers last night, Max Scherzer became the first Tigers starter since, get this, 1938, to start a season 9-0. Max Scherzer is on a roll. They beat the Kansas City Royals last night, 3-2. Man, he's the first Tiger since Vern Kennedy back in 1938 to start 9-0. Simply unbelievable. Max Scherzer, without a doubt, no question about it, he is right now the best pitcher on the Tigers roster. He really has it going. He allowed 3 hits, 2 walks, and 2 earned runs over 7 innings. Had 6 strikeouts. Now, he did start off shaky with 2 walks in the first inning, but he settled down and really got things going. Man, and I'll tell you, this is a funny aspect of this story. Scherzer, I mean, he had about 2 or 3 throwback jerseys that he wore throughout the game. He said he changed jerseys about 3 times. Trying to stay dry. It included switching to a 2011 road jersey that had a Sparky 11 patch in honor of former Tigers manager Sparky Anderson in the middle inning. So that was pretty funny. But he gets the job done. He has allowed 15 hits, 10 walks, and 8 earned runs in 36 innings with 38 strikeouts over his last 5 starts. That is just sick with it, folks. Unbelievable, man. All right, Aaron Crow. Now, he started for the Royals last night. He's a college teammate of Scherzer's, actually. They both went to Missouri. He took the loss after pitching out on a bases-loaded jam in the 7th. Scherzer says, quote, "We're buds. We played at Missouri together. I'm a junior. He's a freshman, so I'll always have a leg up on him." So that's pretty funny. Jose Valverde also closed out and earned his 9th save. Billy Butler, also, he was ejected after arguing a call on the 3rd strike. Valverde got Lorenzo Cain to pop out and David Lowe to ground out to end the game. So, interesting stuff, guys. Max Scherzer, he's rolling 9-0. The first Tiger started to do that again since 1938. Also, want to update you on some news about Austin Jackson. Austin Jackson went 1-for-3 with a strikeout and an RBI. He played 5 innings in center field in his 2nd rehab game with the AAA Toledo team. That's the Tigers minor league team. Jackson is on the disabled list with that left hammy still bothering him, but he could be activated Friday. Tigers manager Jim Leland says, quote, "We have to make sure he's ready to hit up here." So Austin Jackson, hopefully he returns very soon. Tigers beat the Royals. They are in action today. Again, folks, I believe at, let me make sure, 2:10 p.m. Yes, 2:10 p.m. Detroit at Kansas City. So, congrats to Max Scherzer. He is something else. All right, high school baseball and softball. Just to update you guys on some of the big action that happened yesterday, Hazlitt loses 7-1 to Grand Rapids Christian. Now, Hazlitt was on a roll before this one. They had actually scored 17 runs in their previous 2 games. The Vikings, man, they ran up against a really good team against Grand Rapids Christian. They are actually the defending state champions. So, I mean, when you're playing Grand Rapids Christian, you got to bring it. 7-1 was the final of that one. And in softball, Portland St. Pat's loses to, I believe I'm saying this right, Ubli in 10 innings, I believe. 3-2 was the final of that one. So the Shamrocks, they finished the year with a record of 32-7. Really solid year for them. And also co-champions of the CMAC and as softball classic runners-up. All right, Tim Hardaway Jr., he moves up in the draft, according to ESPN.com's Chad Ford. Now, the 6'6" former Michigan shooting guard, he's really, really been impressing a lot of teams throughout his outings and trying out for different teams. He looked great at May's NBA Combine and looks to be solidifying possibly like a first-round pick, middle of the first round to late first-round pick right now. He's worked out for the Chicago Bulls, Milwaukee Bucks, Minnesota Timberwolves, the Atlanta Hawks, and he also has a workout, two workouts coming up with the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Brooklyn Nets. So Chad Ford also reports that Michigan point guard Trey Burke is slipping from that number 6 pick to possibly going to the Sacramento Kings, and he might be moved to the number 7 pick. But who knows? Like I said, this is all predictions right now. Heck, you never know. The Pistons might even end up snagging Trey. So we'll see what happens. And also in college football, ESPN now, well, not ESPN, he's just a college football analyst, Matt Millen, of course, former Lions, Detroit Lions CEO and Penn State linebacker, Matt Millen. He's ranked MSU linebacker Max Bulla as a top 10 linebacker in college football. Max is really a beast. Look forward to watching him this upcoming season. But Matt Millen predicts that he is a top 10 linebacker, folks. So we'll see. Also, he also had Stanford's Shane Scow, or Scove, I should say, excuse me. Alabama's C.J. Mosley, Wisconsin's Chris Borland, Notre Dame's Prince Shebo. I mean, the list goes on and on, but Max Bulla is in that list. And also more predictions from other journalists. Michigan State sophomore Gary Harris was actually named Sporting News's top shooting guard in college basketball. Yes, Gary Harris. Sporting News considers Gary Harris to be the top shooting guard in college basketball. And I can kind of see it, man, with a lot of guys leaving for the NBA last season. Gary Harris really has I mean, he was unbelievable. Big Ten Freshman of the Year last season. I mean, he's got a stroke out this world, can really shoot the ball. Only thing I would see Gary really needs to improve on is possibly that first step getting to the basket. He can go to the basket, but that first step off the dribble, it's a little bit slow. So he'll continue to improve. Gary Harris is really, really something special. So Sporting News journalist Mike DeCourcy, he's the one who listed the rankings and has Gary Harris as the number one shooting guard in basketball. DeCourcy ranked Harris ahead of Louisville's Russ Smith, Duke's Rashid Solomon, BYU's Tyler Hawes. The list goes on and on for that. So Gary Harris, he averaged 12.9 points, made 41% of his three-point attempts as a freshman. That was unbelievable. Like I said, the guy can really, really shoot. And the funny thing is, talking with Gary throughout last season, he's really, when he was in high school, he really wasn't a shooter. That's something he just developed over time, and boy, was he good at it. So 41% from his three-point attempts as a freshman. That's before he was announced that he would not declare for the NBA draft and come back with MSU next season. All right, the San Antonio Spurs and the Miami Heat. The San Antonio Spurs take a 2-1 lead over the Miami Heat after beating them, get this, for those of you who watched it, 113-77 last night. The third biggest victory in NBA Finals history. 113-77 really surprised me. I mean, and the Spurs, they made a Finals record 16 three-pointers yesterday. Danny Green had 7 of those three-pointers. And Gary Neal, I mean, who would have thought that Gary Neal and Danny Green would come out and have the outing they did yesterday? Unbelievable. So Danny Green had 7 of the 16 three-pointers scored by the Spurs yesterday, and Gary Neal had 6 of them. That's a finals record, 16 three-pointers. Unbelievable, guys. I mean, those two were just remarkable. Green ended up finishing with 27, while Gary Neal finished with 24. Now, the previous NBA Finals record for a team was 14 three-pointers, and that was held by 3 teams. LeBron James struggled. no ifs, ands, or buts about it. The best player on the planet really struggled, and you got to give a lot of credit to the San Antonio Spurs and how they played LeBron James. And the primary guy guarding was Kawhi Leonard. LeBron James, he only had 15 points. He has not hit the 20-point mark at all this series so far. Chris Bosh had 12. Dwayne Wade had 16. LeBron shot a horrid 7 for 21 from the field. Missed 11 of his first 13 shots. Again, excellent defense by Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard also, I mean, it was great production all around for the Spurs. Kawhi Leonard had 14 points and 12 rebounds. Here's LeBron James after this one. It's just really bad performance for him.
Well, honestly, I gotta play better. I mean, I can't have a performance like that tonight and expect for us to win. I gotta shoot the ball better. I gotta make better decisions. And, I get into the film and see ways I can do that. But I'm not putting no blame on nobody. I'm owning everything what I did tonight.
So game four is Thursday in San Antonio, where the Heat are now 3-22. Well, that's in the regular season, so that doesn't really count. But still, they really struggle when they're in San Antonio, man. But when I was looking at that game last night, if you look at the way Kawhi Leonard played LeBron James, and this is something, if you're going to beat LeBron James or have any shot at beating him, I believe you got to make him take the jump shot. And there were times where Kawhi Leonard and sometimes where screens were set and Kawhi would be off of him. The San Antonio Spurs as a collective whole had a mindset of just giving LeBron the jump shot. If he went to the hole, you get a lot of hands up. You try to foul him because everyone knows you cannot guard LeBron off the dribble. But they did a great job of giving LeBron James the jump shot. And LeBron, frankly, to be honest with you, even though he's improved his jump shot over the years, he really struggled. As you see, I mean, he shot 7 for 21 from the field, missed 11 of his first 13 shots. I mean, that jump shot is good, but it's not great. So if you're going to beat LeBron James, that's the formula to beat him. And LeBron James is something, you know, this is still LeBron James. He's the best player in the league. But it really baffled me that he was not aggressive even at the beginning of the game and the end of the game. So not aggressive at all. And that really surprised me. You have to take more shots, LeBron. You have to be that one because you cannot count on your supporting cast who's been inconsistent throughout this entire playoffs postseason. Guys like Dwayne Wade, who really looks like he's out of it sometimes playing out there. Chris Bosh has been totally inconsistent. That bench, I mean, it's hit or miss. So, LeBron, you got to be the man. And he was not yesterday. And if you look at these three guys who actually had these huge, huge performances, Gary Neal, he actually went undrafted after playing for LaSalle and Towson, then played overseas for three seasons in Italy and Spain and Turkey. Then you look at Green, who had been cut multiple times, including James's Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, goodness. And who would have thought these guys? I mean, and then Kawhi Leonard, it was a draft night trade acquisition from actually San Diego State. I mean, he's just, this is crazy. I mean, these guys who you don't think, and the Spurs have a history of doing this. I mean, they just create winners, and that's a great testament to Greg Popovich. All right, let's move on. Kobe and his parents. Yes, Kobe Bryant's memorabilia suit is, of course, now finished. Kobe's mother was, if you guys haven't heard about this, Kobe's mother was planning to auction off some of Kobe's most prized basketball possessions. I mean, some that date way back to his high school playing career. So it's now settled now. It ended with an apology from Kobe's parents and a settlement that allows less than 10% of the items originally intended for sale to be auctioned. So Bryant and the company that was auctioning off the memorabilia, they reached a deal 1 week before the two sides were actually due to go to trial in New Jersey. And the agreement now allows a sale of 6 items, which Golden Auctions president Ken Golden told ESPN.com that was Monday that he is confident to sell more than $500,000 combined. So in the auction, I mean, there were things like Bryant's high school uniforms, 2 rings celebrating the 2000 Lakers championship that were gifted to Bryant's parents. I mean, just a lot of really cool stuff. And so also his parents actually also issued an apology saying, quote, "We regret our actions and statements related to the Kobe Bryant auction memorabilia." These are statements from his mother and his father, Pamela and Joseph Bryant. Quote, "We apologize for any misunderstanding and the unintended pain we may have caused for our son and appreciate the financial support that he has provided to us over the years." Tried to sell the man's stuff. I'm sure he's giving you guys millions. You guys got to sell his stuff. All right, anyway, moving on. Shaq and Dwight Howard. And this is kind of, I have to bring this up because yesterday we talked about Chauncey Billups calling Blake Griffin, his teammate for the Clippers, Blake Griffin, quote, too nice or too soft. And Shaq just did the same thing with Dwight Howard yesterday. So this whole thing of calling players too soft and too nice is kind of a trend. Shaq said the same thing about Los Angeles Lakers center Dwight Howard. He says, quote, he's too nice. And I'm a connoisseur of giggling and playing and all of that and making you laugh and playing with the fans. But when I cross that line, I'm ready to tear your face off. I don't care who it is. You could be one of my aunts or uncles out there. I'm going to give, or maybe I should do it in my Shaq voice. You could be one of my aunts or uncles out there. I'm going to give you these elbows in the chest. I'm going to throw it down their face. Then you're not Shaq talks. But he really just basically calling Dwight out saying you have to be more aggressive. You have to be a killer out there. Shaq's done this before. This is nothing new. He's talked to Dwight and said, hey, Dwight, you got to be more aggressive. You got to be a killer, especially if you come to the Lakers organization. Dwight has kind of just brushed it off and not even acknowledged the comments. So, yeah, but this trend of calling, I wonder who's going to be called soft tomorrow. We'll see. Also want to note, the U.S. soccer team, yes, they beat Panama yesterday to move on in the World Cup qualifier. 2-0 was your score, and the U.S. moved into, get this, first place within its qualifying group with that win. So congrats to the U.S. soccer team trying to qualify for that World Cup. I love watching the World Cup. I'm not a huge soccer fan, but when the World Cup's on, I definitely watch it. And the U.S. really looking good with that that win over Panama. 2-0, they move on. First place in its qualifying group with that win. All right, ladies and gents, well, we have to move on to our last segment of Current Sports. We're going to take your calls about any of the topics discussed today. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Hit me up on Facebook.com/Current Sports. Even tweet me a question at Al Martin WKAR. We want to hear from you. Stick around. More Current Sports is next. Give you freedom, give you fire.
Just about everyone knows the song Gimme Shelter, but not many people think about who's singing the backup vocal. It's Mary Clayton, one of the backup singers featured in the new documentary about backup singers, 20 Feet from Stardom. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Clayton and the film's director, Morgan Neville. Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock.
I'm WKAR's Mark Bayshore. 7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat. From government to the arts, sports to education, from business to travel, it's all got a home. It's Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 FM and at noon on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I am Al Martin. It's that time when we hear from you. That's right. Give us a call at 517-355-9527. We'll talk about anything that's on your mind. In the meantime, it's Barbershop Wednesday. That's right. We will discuss a sports topic just like we're in the barbershop. You know when you guys go in and get a cut. I mean, the first thing you hear is guys arguing. You hear Clippers and all that. Guys arguing about sports all of the time. Everybody thinks they're an expert. So I'm joined by my production assistants, Alex Sharg and Matt Lutke, now joining me as we debate whether or not instant replay should be allowed in baseball. Now, we talked a little bit about this at the top of the hour with Mark Ewell, who's the assistant director over at the MHSAA. And actually, I'm actually getting some tweets from you guys about that conversation. Jesse Goldberg-Strassler of the Lansing Lugnuts, the voice of the Lansing Lugnuts, he says, quote, replay should absolutely be used in baseball. No doubt in my mind, use it for everything except balls and strikes. Jesse just tweeted me that. Jesse, thanks for that tweet. I'm going to echo those sentiments in just a minute. And we also have another tweet from who I just got tweeted, Jessica. She says, tell your fans what they think about D-Wade and Gabrielle Union. Is Gabrielle Union messing up D-Wade Stilo out there on the court? If you don't know who Gabrielle Union is, Gabrielle Union is actually, she's an actress who is Dwayne Wade's dating her. And I don't know, man. Something's up with Matt.
There's got to be something. If it's not his knee, Gabrielle might be as likely as just about anything else. Anytime somebody of his caliber struggles the way he is, you're going to look for any possible answer.
Anything.
And, hey, Gabrielle Union, she's as good a possibility as any. So I wouldn't rule it out, but it wouldn't be at the top of my list of things that has him in a funk.
I totally agree with you. When you look at Dwayne Wade, I've never seen him struggle like this before. And, it's really disheartening because I know the talent that he has, and I've seen it. You know, all of us have seen it throughout the years, and to see him, I mean, he just looks out of it, man. It makes you question. You never know what's going on at home, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, maybe he's just on that downward slope of his career, but at the same time, it's like he struggled last year and then turned it on when he had to, but it seems like that on-off switch is, you know, it's getting a little out of whack, so who knows?
Yeah, without a doubt. So, guys, tweet me a question, Al Martin at WKAR. We will discuss it on air. In the meantime, we got to get into this debate. Should instant replay be allowed in baseball? Matt, go ahead. You got the floor first, man.
I think it's a no-brainer. I really do. It's long overdue. I mean, you've seen other sports go to it. Yesterday, of course, we did the top five blown calls. Doing some research for that, I came across this basketball game. I know this is a little bit of a digression. Michigan State, Georgia Tech, back in 1990, Kenny Anderson hit a three-pointer or a two-pointer, but he let it go late. And quotes after the game from Bobby Kremins, who is Georgia Tech's coach, we don't need replay in our game. When it's that close, it has to count. Can you imagine a coach saying that in this day and age? Like,
right.
Times have changed, and baseball needs to change too. And,
right.
You know, changes are coming. Yeah, more replay coming in 2014. I think the bigger question is going to be, how do they implement it? Is it going to be like the NFL, where you have a coach's challenge, or are they going to be looking at every single play? Because, I mean, some of the main things that people are saying as possible negatives is it slows down the pace of the game. But at the same time, is the pace of the game really that fast in baseball? I think
exactly.
The slow pace of the game is part of it. So I don't know why a 2-minute and 15-second review is really going to make all that much difference in the scheme of things.
I totally agree with you. I mean, when you look at this whole dynamic, baseball is really the only sport that's been lagging as far as implementing replay into its field of play. And like, I mean, we talked about this, man. I mean, when you talk about a game, at the very least, it should be allowed in the playoffs, because these are Mark talked about it too. These are times when baseball or a game could really, really financially, there's millions and millions of dollars involved on one call possibly. And to not go back and review that is a crime, I think. Especially
right.
If you can review it. You have the technology to do it, but you won't do it. I understand. With the whole baseball, one of the biggest arguments is maintaining the human element and all that kind of stuff. Don't give me that crap. I mean, because that was back in the day when you didn't have the ability to go and look at it. But now that you do, why not utilize it and get the call right
exactly
instead of wrong? Especially when you got World Series potentials here could go up in flames.
Exactly, and no one wants to see that, and certainly nobody wants to be the ump or referee who makes that call that costs a championship one way or the other. I mean, you don't want that on you. That is your lasting legacy if you blow that call. Why not have, you know, the additional benefit of taking a second look and getting it right? Although, I mean, just this season, Angel Hernandez, the umpire, you know, they went to replay to check the A's-Indians game, I believe it was, with the home run that clearly hit off the railing,
yeah,
and they still got it wrong.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
problem.
It's not going to be, you know, everything's not going to be perfect right away.
Right.
But this is a progressive step that needs to be made.
Exactly. So, all right, Alex. I know Alex, as always, thinks the exact opposite of what we think. Go ahead, Alex.
Well, just because you said that, Al, I'm going to side with
No.
today. And go along the lines that we should have instant replay for not just, you know, a play at first or a play at third, but I think we should have instant replay for balls and strikes as well. And the reason that is because we've seen many times before where a strike zone is very large. Let's look at the one yesterday when we had Fred McGriff, Kenny Lofton in that 1997 NLCS series. That was a game that the strike zone was very large. Now, at that point in time, you can either A, as that umpire, stick with your strike zone with the human eye and whatever you see goes, or B, you can maybe look for the second base umpire, that infield umpire, to have the opportunity to overturn calls, because when have you seen that? There's never been a situation where an infield umpire or that second base umpire overturns balls and strikes. And the reason that it's needed is because that just isn't a part of baseball. It's that guy at home that's going to make the calls. So I just think for the necessity, it's not like balls and strikes is out of the human eye, because it's from your shoulder down to, you know, down to that lower part of, you know, your waist, that hittable zone. So if you're saying that it's part of the human eye, that's the argument that I'm sure one of you might make. I just think that it's not, because there is an actual physical zone.
Well, I tell you what, when you look at that and you argue that it should be used for balls and strikes, personally, I think baseball, if it gets slowed down any longer, any more than it is right now, which I think if you do use instant replay for balls and strikes, it will be slowed down tremendously. I mean, I might fall asleep throughout the whole game if that happens. It has to be a limit. If you're going to do that, it has to be a limit, or give like a coach a certain amount of challenges or something like that to use in that instance. Because right now, if the game is slowed down any more, on balls and strikes, it's like, you know how many pitches are thrown in a game?
Yeah, balls and strikes, it becomes really tedious. Yeah. And, you know, that's like what the baseball purists have feared for years. Ever since instant replay started making headway into major sports in general, it was, you know, oh man, we're going to have these robot umpires calling balls and strikes.
Right, right.
What happened to the you know, America's pastime?
Right.
You know, I guess coach's challenge might work in balls and strikes, but maybe that's years down the road. I think you got to take baby steps with this. We don't want to, you know, radically change the sport.
Right.
I think, you know, fair and foul, catch and, you know, trap plays, you know, everything but balls and strikes, I think you can feasibly do and have it be limited in terms of time. But balls and strikes, man, that's
tough.
That's splitting hairs.
Because there's not been many times when a game has really been, you know, like the weight of the game has been on a strike or a ball. There's not been many times. Mostly it's out in the field play. So I don't know if I would go there just yet. Maybe in the future, man. I don't know.
Well, here's what I'm suggesting. I'm not saying that we should take every single play, wait for the umpire to overturn it, go to the booth. I understand that. I'm for you guys that would just take a while. It would slow the game down.
Yeah,
it'd
be too much. Right.
But what I'm saying is there should be a system. Look at this digital world we are in today, an automatic reader of balls and strikes. And I know it's nothing's out like that, but I think that could be a permanent solution.
Now, I was just about to say that. Now, I believe there's possibly technology out there for maybe the plate can sense, you know, if the ball is over the zone or something like that. I don't know. Maybe that'll happen in the future. But, yeah, I hope something like that gets developed. But if you're just challenging on balls and strikes all the time, there has to be a limit if you do it.
Now, what's your take, Al?
That's my take. I mean, I don't think it should be. Instant replay should be on balls and strikes at all. Definitely an out in the field play, because, I mean, I've seen too many games, baseball games, where it's come down to, you know, whether someone being safe or not, and that really hinders the game and allows someone else to win it, you know? So, I don't know. That's my take on it, man.
Yeah, and when there's this much at stake, especially in playoffs,
right.
I mean,
way too much
getting the call right is the most important thing. You know, if it takes a few extra minutes here or there, I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference. You have to get the call right. It preserves some integrity of the game, I think.
But hey,
you know,
hey
you can't have things decided and erred on, and, you know, just a huge mistake, and then that decides the game, that decides a series, that decides
especially
a
when you
race.
Can look at it. We have the technology.
Right,
I mean,
and we've had it forever.
Yeah, we've had it forever, exactly. I mean, baseball is really lagging on it. I mean, basketball, football. I mean, I could go on and on, and baseball's still lagging behind. I mean, that makes no sense to me.
What about a called third strike? What if it's a World Series game and it's the final batter? That's what I'm saying. That could just impact the last call of the game as well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you're going to do one on balls and strikes, there has to be a limit, though. Like, you have to have a certain amount of challenges. You just can't challenge any. I mean, a coach can be challenging everything.
Yeah, I mean, some at-bats are like 20 pitches.
Yeah.
I mean, and you have a guy arguing obviously foul balls are foul balls. But, I mean, you know, right. If something happens there, that's gonna take some time. I don't want to have an hour and a half of a fifth inning. It just seems like that's where you run into some problems.
Yeah, without a doubt. All right, well, before we leave, we want to give a special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Alex Sharg and Matt Lutke, our production assistants. My intern, Mike Corey, along with my engineer, Aaron Young. Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to Mark Yule, assistant director for the Michigan High School Athletic Association, for his insight on referees and sports. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Same place, same time tomorrow. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FMHD3 East Lansing. Be easy, people.